Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Everyone awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
Everyone awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
It's lovely to be here after so long. Not being here. So, it's well. Let's close our eyes and go within. Great sages and saints of the world have all learned how to interiorize their mind. It is essential in terms of knowing our true self. The five senses cognize this world, informs the brain, and generally speaking, most people get completely focused on this world. As soon as the eyes open in the morning, all attention goes out to this world. But the yogis, the saints, and sages realized long ago, by closing these eyes, turning the attention within, and particularly at this point between the eyebrows, or the heart center, or the top of the head, these are three centers of consciousness. And when Jesus said that he stood at the doorway, this is the doorway, this point between the eyebrows, and it's there that revelations come. You see the great light of God there. In the beginning, you close these eyes and you just see darkness. But gradually, light begins to expand. Light lifts you up and purifies your mind. So it is with this intention that we go within. And then you feel at the back of your head that there is a opening there. And in that opening, you feel this sound of Om, or Amen, or Amin. It's all describing the same experience. In the same way that mathematics, if it be true, would be discoverable in whatever language that you have, in whatever part of the world that you are. If God is truth and reality for the supreme R in it, then it must be universally true. Wherever you would be, whatever religion you would follow, whatever language you would speak, God must be there and discoverable and universally true. And so you enter into the inner temple, temple of consciousness, and you feel this great magnetic pull come to this third eye point, this ajna, and it lifts you up, and there you see the Christ light, that beautiful light, and first it can be a halo of gold, and then you may see a halo of deep blue. And then this shining star of a silver white light. And that is the doorway into higher consciousness, into Christ consciousness or Krishna consciousness. But in yoga, it's called Kutastha Chaitanya. So you see, wherever you go in this world, you'll discover the same great truths are being spoken about. And the wonderful thing is, you don't have to go to another country. You don't have to become somebody other than you are. You don't have to have a new name or any of those things in order to discover this truth. It's discoverable right within the laboratory of your own being. And you don't have to take anyone's word for it. You can find that it is true right within you. You are the church. You are the laboratory. You are the place where the action takes place. And you think of your spine, and your spine starts down at the base of where your spine originates, and it goes up the body. And in a physical sense, it's not all one continuous thing, but when you go into the more subtle bodies, the astral body, you see that it is a one continuous stream of energy, of consciousness, that is flowing within your spine. And most people are relegated to the lower regions, which has to do with survival, has to do with pleasure, has to do with individual will. And these three centers take up most people's entirety of consciousness. But when you begin to get lifted up even higher, you go to the heart center. In a human sense, this often happens when we fall in love with someone, or you have a child, or someone very dear to you, and your heart opens up, and suddenly you would do for somebody else. You might even sacrifice your own life for them if it meant that. You go beyond yourself and you feel yourself now not just solely self-centered, but other-centered. And that's in a human sense. But when it awakens in divine love, this opens up a brand new center of consciousness. This happened for me many years ago. I was going to university at the time. I had met Mother and taken Kriya. And I had started into some of what are called Kundalini experiences. And the New Testament and Old Testament is described as a serpent. And it's very interesting when you look at it, because as we know, of course, in the Garden of Eden story, the serpent is the bad guy. He's the one who tempts Eve and then Adam into a downward current into the spine. And that's what the tree is. It's the tree of life. And the tree of life is your own spine and your own brain. And this is the tree. And so the serpent is a tempting force then. But when you look at Jesus' references towards the serpent, it's impositive. Wise as a serpent. And that even as Moses lifted up the serpent, up the pole as he did, of his staff, so must the Son of Man, so must you raise that serpent force up. So you reverse the current that happened symbolically in the Garden of Eden. You reverse that current and you begin to lift it up instead of taking it down the spine. And it comes to the heart center. And when this Kundalini force first started in me, it was sitting in meditation with the group, much like this. And we were sitting in complete silence for a period of time. And in that time, suddenly I felt this tremendous magnetic force here at the Ajna. And it was actually quite painful. It was difficult. And then it grew hot. And suddenly there was not an actual snap, but it felt like a snap at the base of my spine. And this tremendously powerful current flowed up through my spine, up to the base of my skull, and came across directly to this Ajna point here. And I felt like I could fry eggs on it. It was like a hot frying pan. It was so hot there. And it stayed like that for some time, some 5 or 10 minutes. And then gradually it began to subside. And I was thrilled because I had had Mother's teachings. I knew about the potential of this Kundalini force, but I'd never had it before. And that was the beginning of a long journey, a journey of transformation, a journey in which consciousness was released from this physical body, from the more subtle energy astral body, and even the very subtle causal body or the idea body. And when you win release from these three things, you win your freedom in spiritual consciousness. Now, this is symbolically represented. You may see different statues of the Buddha. And in some of them, he'll have three rings above his head. And then above that is a spire pointing upwards. And this represents release from the physical body as the largest, lowest ring. Then the next one is slightly smaller, and it's the astral. And the third one is a very small dome, and it's the causal, or the idea body. And then the spire pointing upwards is the complete release from all three of these. In the symbology of Shiva, you will see that he has serpents entwined around him. In the sun, it may creep you out a little bit to see the serpents all around him. But then you realize what the inner meaning is. And he has lifted up the serpent force. And you will see different representations where the serpent is actually over the top of the head and it has seven heads to it. These are the seven different centers in the spinal consciousness. And once again, this is a release from all these limitations. But at that time, as I was going to the university, I didn't have the heart center open, even on a human level. I just felt completely devoid of all love. And I knew the word, and I knew what it was supposed to mean, but I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it for myself. I didn't feel it for anyone else. It was a mystery to me. And I wondered at that mystery. And what is it that is supposed to be meant by divine love? And it was a complete blank for me. I was in the habit, going up at that time, there's a Seaholme Hill that was right behind the house where I lived. And I would go up there, and one day I was wandering up there, and I found this large flat boulder that was up on the top of the hill. And I could look out, particularly at nighttime, and see all the city lights. And I just felt a strange attraction towards this rock. It felt somehow that it was a wonderful place to sit and meditate. So every night, I would take myself up there, and I would meditate. And I would start out looking out over the lights, and gradually my consciousness was being taken in. And one night, as I sat there, this opening came in this ajna here, and I had had this eruption of the kundalini, and so at various times it would come to me. And there I saw Jesus in a wonderful vision of seeing him there. And I knew that it was auspicious, that it was presaging something to come, because my heart was so painful. It felt like it was something that was cracked down the center, and it was just bursting to get out of there, but it wouldn't burst. And so it was just producing this tremendous pressure and pain there. And it was the opening of the heart center. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know what I would experience. I just knew that I was in tremendous pain with this. And that I saw this vision of Jesus, and I really felt inspired by that. It was so beautiful, so wonderful. And so I went up the next night, and this pain in my heart grew even more profound, even deeper, and I just didn't think I could stand it any longer at all. And suddenly it was as if a seed that would burst open, and my heart center burst open, and this tremendous sense of love started flowing through this heart, and it was flowing out into all creation. And I felt like that the air itself was a sea of love. It's impossible to describe, really, but that's the best that I can do. And so I was immersed in this sea of love, and I'm sure that I would have been locked up and the key would have been thrown away if anybody saw me, because I was swimming in the dirt, because the dirt itself seemed to be imbued with this love. I was kissing the branches of the trees, and I was just mad with this love. And from having gone from such a desert of nothing at all to this was really a tremendous transformation. And for the first time in my life, I realized what this love was. And it was flowing out to everything and everyone. And it just lasted for several hours as I sat with this and I walked around with it. And finally, it too began to subside. But it changed me, never to be changed back again. It wasn't always that intense. I wouldn't have been able to operate at all in this world if it had been. But there was some flavor of it. There was some opening. There was some flow that began with that that has never completely abandoned me since. And this is the opening of the fourth center. And it's a tremendous thing to do. But it's just one stop along the way as you ascend up through the spinal consciousness. And the next one is at your throat chakra, at the fifth chakra there. And for years and years, I felt that I had a stone, a hard stone in the center of my throat there. And I even wondered whether a doctor would be able to discover that there was some growth or something there that was causing this. But somehow I knew it wasn't a physical something. Yeah, but it stayed there and it stayed there. And so through continued meditation, gradually came to the point where that dissolved. See, these are knot points within your spinal consciousness, and they have to be worked out. They have to be worked through. They represent different stages of your past where you have become locked with these states of consciousness. They're no longer free and open. It has all happened symbolically when the Garden of Eden and every culture, every religion has its fall of man. And sometimes you might think, well, we're all paying the price for what Adam and Eve did so long ago. Why is that? Why do we have to pay the price? But it's not like that. It's a symbolic story. And it's what we've done in consciousness, and not all have done it. Not all souls have. But most souls who live on this earth have done it. And we focused our attention into this earth. I remember my first incarnation, and I was focused on a lava flow. And I thought how beautiful that is and what that would be like to experience that lava flow. And my consciousness went into it. See, at that time, we're all free to be able to experience these things. And so my mind went into the lava consciousness, and I felt its flow, and I felt its movement, and what it was like to be part of this. You might think this is crazy talk, but it actually happened to me. And so it explained then how I started getting interested in this material creation. And as we've all done that through our souls, you might say devolution. We started out at a high state and we chose to enter into these more material states. And as we did so, we got more and more engrossed with the things of this world. And essentially, God told us from the beginning, it's all right to go in. I've made all of this creation, and it's all good. But don't get too imbued with it. Don't get too focused on it, to the exclusion of being with me. And in the story of Adam and Eve, they were walking in the garden, of course, and they would walk with God every day. They talked with God. That was an everyday part of their consciousness and how they operated. But they made a choice, and they made a choice to separate themselves from God. And as the story goes, God sentenced them out of the garden. But I think it's a bit more refined than that. Because due to their choices, they took themselves out of the garden. They went against the perfect law of divine consciousness. And they became overly focused upon the things of this world. And that is represented most extremely in the poles of consciousness as sex consciousness. And in sex consciousness, you get so pulled into this body and the pleasures of this body that you forget the things of spirit and the things of God. But that can happen on many different levels. And gradually, my consciousness went from this lava consciousness into other forms of consciousness, vegetation consciousness and animal consciousness, and that's how we go through this consciousness. And so we go from the mineral kingdom, and we go into the vegetable kingdom, and then to the animal kingdom. And we have all of these experiences, and we gradually forget our divine connection. We get totally pulled into this material creation. And from a soul standpoint, there's no real problem in the sense that we can never be truly separated from our Creator. Only in consciousness, we create a wall of separation. And we forget who we are as a spiritual being, and we become totally immersed into this material creation. As a result of that, we start to make more and more choices that are not divinely attuned, but come out of the sense of self, what I want. And what I want becomes predominant. And as we continue through creation, we come to the human creation. And humanity has some unique aspects to it. We stand upright, and so our spine is not parallel with this world, but rather it's perpendicular, and it stands upright. And we have openings of consciousness within the spine, capacities that many other forms of life simply don't have. And so we have this consciousness at the back of the head that the master described is corollary with the medulla oblongata. And so life energy comes in through the back of our head, comes into the brain, is distributed through the brain, and then goes down through the spinal system and out through the afferent and the efferent nerves. And it gives us capacity for body consciousness, for being able to move this body, to speak, to hear, to see, to touch, to smell, to taste, all the things that this body represents. And through that, we forget even more our divine connection. And we go through so many, many experiences. We go through so many, many different lifetimes. And gradually we begin to get lonely for God. We begin to think, oh, this world is nothing but a repetition. Sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're sad. Sometimes I get what I want, sometimes it's taken away. It always seems to be alternating on these waves. And I'm just getting a little bit tired of it. I really want to find happiness, lasting happiness. Something that isn't born and then dies, as all life seems to do. And so it sets us on to a spiritual quest. And through that spiritual quest, perhaps we learn the truth about creation, our creator, our nature of relationship with him. Perhaps it comes in the form of a traditional religion. And we think, all right, God is up there in some antiseptic corner of the cosmos, and he's handing out smotes and smites. And not exactly sure what smotes and smites are, but I'm pretty sure I don't want to be the recipient of them. But gradually, we learn, no, God resides inside of me, not just someplace outside of me. God is the evolutionary force within my own being. He's awakening me. And through that awakening force, I began to get a real interest in, I want to know what that is. I don't want to just read about it. I don't want to just hear about it. I need to know it. And it's then that we get put on a very serious path towards enlightenment. And so then, if we are fortunate, then we have this eruption of this force, this kundalini force. It's a reversal of this downward serpent force, and now it's rising up inside of us. And so because of all the things of my past, I had this stone in my throat. And it was gradually dissolving, but it was painful at times. It was difficult. I felt stuck there. And one time I had this crisis, because as my guru, Mother Hamilton, talked about, this crisis is produced right within our own being. But the Joseph and Mary gland are right within our own brain as the pineal and the pituitary gland. And they have secretions. And these secretions come out and they form a seed. That seed, as Mother described, goes down the ganglionic nervous system and goes down into a place right behind the stomach that's a conical-like cave. And Bethlehem means house of bread. And so this is where the Christ is born. You see, you see the star of the east right here. This is the east side of your body in the front. Your back is the west, your top is the north, and the base is the south. So when you read these directions in different scriptures, they're referring to what is going on within your own spinal consciousness and in your brain. And so when the three wise men saw the star of the east, they saw this light right here at the point between the eyeballs. You see how beautiful this is. It's a blueprint for every individual so that they'll know when these experiences happen that it's confirmation that this is the truth, and this is what's going on right within your own body, right within your own consciousness. And so as you are lifted up then, you see this star of the east, this Christ seed is born inside of you. And then it travels down to the base of your spine, and that is Egypt, symbolically. Now, the poor Egyptians, I'm sure they have something else in mind for what that lowest consciousness is called. But, you know, when you're from another place, then you get to pick the nemesis. And for in the Jewish scriptures, it is Egypt. And so it goes down into this. And this is the place of enslavement, of consciousness. And then gradually, it is Moses and the law. He takes the tribes of Israel and starts to go up the spine. In the New Testament scripture, it's the Christ. He enters into Galilee, which means the circuit. And the circuit is the spine. And then he begins to gather his disciples. And each one of these centers, these lower six centers, that doesn't include the very top up here, which has no duality to it, at the Sahasrara, or the crown chakra at the top. But each one of these has a duality, and he's gathering his disciples as he goes up. Because each one of these centers of consciousness has a polar opposite. It has a positive and a negative to it. And so each one of these disciples he's gathering as he's going up is his spinal consciousness. And he's lifting it up. He's going up the circuit, and he's teaching all of the people. And he's bringing enlightenment. He's bringing new messages, revelations about what the truth is. And you see it happens all right within your own being. And so this Christ seed is coming up. And as Mother described, that seed came up and through her own throat. And when she took it, she finally worked it up out. And when she took it out of her own body, it was had a styrofoam type covering to it, and inside was one perfect drop of blood. And this was the body and the blood of Christ. This was the inner communion. And then she took that and she swallowed it, and she took communion with the Christ and that Christ seed. For a very long time, I felt that Christ seed working up through my throat, but I never had it come out of my mouth in the way that Mother did. And she said that was a very rare thing that she experienced. Not everybody experienced everything that she did. And so I'm sorry for that, but that's something that didn't happen for me. But I felt that Christ seed working itself up, and one day it seemed to dissolve and go back down into my body. And so this is the things that happens right within your own body. And some of them are physical like this. Some of them are much more subtle than that. But when I say subtle, it doesn't mean powerful, and it doesn't mean that you don't definitely know it. It just means it's not physical in that sense. So it's happening on every single level of your being. And so gradually this fifth center here dissolved, and it freed that up. And that is perception of truth. It's dharma. It's the right action and knowing what the right action is. So it's a level of perception of truth. But there's further to go. So you go up higher to the top of the spine, and now you're in the Christ center in the brain. And this Christ center is perfect manifestation of God consciousness, but here in this material world. And so you look out through these two eyes, and suddenly the world transforms. I remember one time I was walking down the street, and the world just took on this wonderful, wonderful sense of beauty and perfection. It was a nice street, but it didn't have that perfection in it as a material kind of plane. I was seeing into the more subtle levels of existence. And you see God in everything. You know, when Jesus took up a flower and he said, even Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed as one of these. Just imagine what he was seeing. He was talking and relating a truth that he was experiencing. That kind of beauty, that kind of wonder, that kind of glory that's imbued in a flower. Now, you can look at a flower and say, that's very nice, and you can do the know all about it, but you may not see it in all of its glory that Solomon, even in all of his glory, could not even hold a candle to it. And then you look out into all this creation, and you see it all filled with this divine splendor. That in the one of the lost gospels of Jesus, that it said that the kingdom of heaven is spread all over this world. But who has the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it? But when you enter into these experiences, you see, then you do have the eyes to see it, and you do have the ears to hear it. And it is beautiful, and so you see this world just transformed into a living heaven. Not because the world itself has changed, but because it's always been there. But now your eyes are open to it, your inner eye of intuition sees it, feels it, experiences it profoundly, more deeply than any earthly experience you'll ever have. And this is the opening of Christ consciousness. You see it spread all over this world. You see that everything has it, that every person is imbued with it. And it opens you to the wonder and the beauty of this creation that is far more magnificent than a scientist will ever know just simply from studying the outer facts. That can be fascinating enough in itself. But it's so much more than that. So much more beautiful, so much more wonderful. And you see, all of these experiences are contained in you. But for many of us, we're sleeping gods. And we have this not yet awakened. We have not yet fully appreciated and apprehended this great truth. And when this Christ Center is open to you, that leads into God the Father. And God the Father is beyond creation, spirit perfect, unmanifest, without any form, without any limitation. And when you enter into that, it lifts you up completely. And this is what the Buddha, the statue of the Buddha, represents with the spire pointing straight up. It's gone beyond these three limitations. And now he's perfectly immersed in divine consciousness. Now, really, when you look at the history of India and you look at the history of Hinduism, the Buddha didn't really discover anything new. The way he formulated it was particular to him. But even the Sanskrit that he spoke and referred to, these were, nirvana was already a word and had the same meaning as what the Buddha had. What the Buddha didn't like and didn't care for was the worship, so much worship of these images and these forms. And they would ask him, is there such a thing as God? He says, if you don't have the realization, don't worry about that. Get the realization first, then you'll know all these other things. Because he knew the tendency of the human mind, and it's the tendency of us all. We want to reduce things so that they are comfortable. You know, we learn a little bit about religion. And then we say, all right, that's what God is all about. And we put it in a nice box, tie it in a bow, put a label on it, put it up on the shelf and say, good enough. You know, and perhaps when we die, then we'll know the answers. We don't see it for its vital, powerful, transformative thing that it is in our lives. We don't see it, and we don't have the ears to hear it, because God himself has not awakened himself in us yet. But when he does, you have to know the truth. You have to know the truth. And you won't get waylaid by the things of this world. I remember a life in a previous life where I had come in and I was so determined that I wanted to make spiritual progress. And then, as God showed me through the entirety of it all, I came to that end of the life and I came up out of body consciousness. And I had remembered that intent that I came into this lifetime. And I had forgotten it. I was not a bad person. I was not evil. But I had not really set my mind onto realizing the truth. And I felt terribly devastated by this. I was so determined when I came in. And I just simply got caught up with the mundane details of life. It's so easy to do. Making a living, keeping a home, raising a family, all the things that we get caught up in. And then sometimes people say or think to themselves, well, when I retire, then I'll really meditate. You know, then I'll have the time. But who doesn't? Suddenly all these other things open up to you and you don't take the time. You don't make the effort. And as a result of that, we can wake up from a lifetime, even as I did with that, and have a deep, deep and profound regret for not making more spiritual progress in this lifetime. But you know, even that experience, having such a profound regret, that too had a positive impact because I was so determined after that. I will never live another lifetime getting swallowed up by the things of the world. I will seek out that truth. I was so determined because I was so disappointed. And that's a great truth in life, that oftentimes the further we get from God, that finally we get to a certain point and we just get slingshotted back towards God because we've gone so far out. Jesus said it this way. He said, it's better to be hot or cold, but to be in the middle and a little bit of indifference. How do you reach a person like that? It's better to be either hot or cold. And if somebody is, look at the lives of so many saints, and they were not good people before they put themselves on the path. There's Sage Valmiki, who is known all over India, and he wrote the great epic Ramayana. And he was a thief and a murderer. He was a roadside thief, and he would kill people. And one day, Narada was walking down the road, and he's an emissary from heaven, Narada. And so as he's walking down the road, Valmiki jumps out in front of him. And he said, give me your money or your life. Well, Narada is a wonderfully enlightened being. He doesn't respond at all to it. And he just looks at it. With such love. And so that sets Valmiki back. He says, who are you? He said, when I meet people, they either fight me, which I like, and then I kill them, or they run away, which I chase them down, and then I get the money and kill them. But you're just standing there, and you're looking at me like nobody's ever looked at me before. What is it that you're looking at me? How is that? Narada says, I'm looking at you with love. I've never seen that before. Yeah. He says, Narada says, I have a question for you. Why do you rob and kill people? You know about the law of karma. Oh, yeah, I suppose so. You know, it's always distant, you know, when you think you're getting away with things. I do it for my family, to feed my family. Narada says, no, that's fine. He says, will your family share your karma, what you've been doing? Oh, I think so. Why don't you go home and ask them? I'll wait. So Valmiki goes off, goes to his family, asks his wife. He says, you know how I earn my living. Will you share my karma with me? No, husband. It's your job to produce the living for the family. How you do it is your business. But I'm not going to pay that karma for you. Oh, shoulders went down. He felt so bad. He asked all of his children, no, Papa. It's your job to earn money for the family. That's not nothing to do with us. He was so disheartened. So he came back to Narada. Narada still standing waiting. He said, well, I don't even need to ask you what they said. I can see you're not feeling very good at all. No, no. I'm done with this world. I'm done with it. So Narada teaches him how to meditate on God. And he sits down to meditate. And he had such a strong personality and such a strong mind. He just sat there for years and years and years. He sat there for so long, and I've seen them in India. There are anthills that are 6 feet high. And he sat there for so long that ants built up an anthill around him. Wonderful stories. Huh? And so he's sitting there meditating and meditating for so many years, and he's just in the bliss, and he's just gone past everything that he ever did. And so Narada is walking down the road one time, and he knows that Valmiki is there. And so he breaks open the anthill, scatters it, reveals the man inside, and says, "I have a job for you." And so he used to play a role in Rama's incarnation. And so he formed an ashram and started taking on disciples and eventually raised the children for Rama. So this is the way that it was with him. And he totally transformed his life. So sometimes the people that you think are the worst people in life, you never know how near or how far somebody is. You can't judge on the outside. Because somebody like that is so strong in themselves. And when they turn their minds towards God, they're so powerful. They're like a powerful rocket going straight for the goal. And don't deviate one little bit left or right. When we can be like that and have our mind so focused, laser-like, on the goal, and not get dissuaded, not get disrupted, not get distracted, but go only for the goal. You see? Then we make such progress. Sri Yukteswar said, if you could focus on God, every ounce of your being, you would realize him right now in this instant. But you see, most of us are of mixed nature. We want to know the truth, but we also want to have an ice cream cone. We want to know the truth, but we also want to work things out and earn some money. We're of mixed nature. So it takes us longer. And then sometimes we completely forget our path. We get lost in this world. But then God begins to speak to us, whisper in our ears again. Come with me, my child. Come with me. Come up and rise up and know as I know. Be as I am. This is the truth. You are made in my likeness and my image. Likeness is pure spirit beyond all creation. Image is the expressiveness of God as creation. In India, they call it God's Leela, his play. And he enjoys his play. Now, sometimes we may think he's a little deranged for the play that he's arranged, but he's given us free will. And you think about this earth, and you think about all the things that we have, we could have heaven on earth right here. There's such a wonderful story about the man who was died one day, and he was given a glimpse of what hell looked like. And he saw there a beautiful banquet table, all laid out. But he saw all the people around it looking like skeletons, and they were angry and stabbing at each other and fighting with each other. And when he looked more closely, he saw that they all had forks attached to their hands, but the forks were too long so that they couldn't feed themselves. And they were all starving to death, and they were all so angry and upset and hurt. Then he was taken up to heaven. Saw the same kind of banquet table laid out. All the people were so happy, so loving, so filled with light. They had the same appendage on their hands, too long to feed themselves. But they were feeding each other. See? They were feeding each other. And because of that, everyone was happy. Everyone was fulfilled. Everyone was filled with joy and light and laughter. We have everything on this earth to make this a heaven. And just think, if we lived in a world where everyone was serving God in one way, loving God in one way, how that would transform this world. Now, we're not there, needless to say, but we can lead the way. We can begin with our own lives by making daily decisions where we give to one another, where we serve one another, where we get out of the way of the little ego that always thinks it needs things first. And if it doesn't get something from somebody else, it feels hurt, it feels angry, it wants revenge. There's that wonderful prayer, who is to blame is not important, only how shall we set the situation right? So to get out of the finger pointing, there's so much of that today. How shall we set the situation right? And let's begin here by setting our situation right, making sure that we're in alignment and attunement with God. And you say, well, I'm not sure what God is or what he wants from me. What does the highest light in you? What does it call you to do? When you are at your best, when you are at your most loving, what does it call you to do? That is the highest light within you. Go according to that, and that will purify your consciousness. Until you can directly apprehend that light and be directed by it in every activity of your life. And you might think, well, I'm not sure that I want that. Who will I be? What will I be? Will I be happy? And we can only say, absolutely yes. Happiness, fulfillment, bliss, joy, light. These are all the attributes of divine consciousness, and they all become you, and you become them. Not through your own power, but through the grace of that light that transforms and changes you and lifts you up. This is the promise from Jesus and Babaji, Lahiri Mahashaya, Sri Yukteswarji, Yoganandaji, Mother Hamilton, Papa Ram Dass, go across the around the world, every culture, every climate, and you will find the same fundamental truths. Now there's lots of events, lots of superstition, lots of other things. There's different languages being used. Symbols are slightly different. But when you look at it, you will find the same underlying truths in everything. You are like the mathematician who is looking, what is that precise truth? And when you get it, you are able to prove it. And you prove it first in yourself because it changes you. You realize the truth. And as the saying goes, and that truth shall set you free. So let us all be inspired to seek out that truth. Let us not get deviated by the things of this world. Certainly we have to live in this world. We have to participate in it. But let us not make it everything. Let us put God first. That means meditate in the morning, pray in the morning, pray at night, meditate at night. Go deeper. Always challenge yourself to go deeper. Whatever you've experienced in God, God is infinite. And whatever you've experienced, there is so much more. And that is true for everyone. So let us not rest complacent on just a little cupful, but to dive into the ocean and swim in that ocean and emerge into that ocean, become one with that ocean. Enlarge in your perception of what is possible. Because you are made in the likeness and in the image of God. Therefore, that universality, that infinity exists inside of you as well. It is the human mind that wants to contain everything for its own comfort. But it is death to spiritual growth. So I pronoun to you all, I bow to the divine light and praise of you. And please repeat after me this prayer of perfection that Mother Hamilton. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty, of thy glorious presence, in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
Surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
The divine grace awaken within you, keep you in that divine consciousness, and become like an unfolding flower, each petal a realization of new truth, new light, new love. Such great joy.
Thank you.
We have a potluck